Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Melissa Campanelli, and I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration. Welcome to today's Retail Online Integration webinar, 6 Ways to Reach Tablet Shoppers to Drive ROI. Today we have 3 great speakers for you. They are Sucharita Mupuru, the Vice President and Principal Analyst at Forrester, Mike Medeo, the Lead User Experience at QVC, and Nathan Richter, the Director of Strategic Services at Monetate. One of the biggest buzzwords heading into 2012 is tablets, iPads, Kindle Fires, and other tablets are used increasingly by consumers for research to ultimately buy online. What's more, according to research from Monetate, tablet shoppers purchase merchandise more frequently. Today, we're going to learn in our presentation leading consumer trends driving the adoption of tablets, how to identify online opportunities from your website traffic, best practices for optimizing your website for tablet shoppers, and so much more. Before we get started, let me point out a few tips on how to make the most of today's live presentation. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help button at the bottom of the console or let us know via the Ask a Question box. Second, make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can see and take part in any interactive portions of today's presentation. To get a PDF version of the slide presentation for future reference, please click on the Download Slides button on the console. If you're enjoying the webinar and would like to spread the word to your peers, you can send an email invitation directly from the console by clicking the Invite a Colleague button. You can also give us your feedback at any time during the hour by clicking the Survey button. The survey will also be distributed at the end of today's webinar. Today's speakers will be answering select questions during the presentation. Use the Ask a Question feature on the console to submit your questions for consideration in advance at any time. We'll be answering questions at the end of the presentation today. If you leave the presentation at any time, you can access the entire webinar on demand for the next 90 days via the same audience link you used to watch the presentation today. After that, the webinar can be viewed from Retail Online Integration's website, and that's www.retailonlineintegration.com/webinar. Finally, we encourage you to tweet about this webinar today. Please do so using hashtag ROIWebinar. And with that, take it away, Sucharita.
Thank you, Melissa. So what I'm going to talk about are really 6 ways to reach tablet shoppers to drive ROI. And one of the kind of guiding principles of this is that it really is so early in the tablet commerce arena. I see it a lot like unmolded clay. It has yet to be shaped, which has some challenges in that it's still so early, so some of the metrics that you're about to see aren't going to be what the metrics are going to be in 12 months or 24 months, because that is going to be such a different universe with respect to tablet commerce than where we are now. But the other challenge is that, and actually I think it's actually pretty exciting, is that there are so many wonderful opportunities to create new experiences through tablets that we haven't seen before and that can really push e-commerce and online shopping as well as multi-shopping in directions that we have never seen before. So I'm going to spend the first few minutes of my presentation giving you a little bit of the data related to the current state of tablet commerce, and then we'll spend the back part of my presentation before I hand it over back to Melissa with some screenshots of the opportunities that exist for retailers and where some of the places where we see some of the most compelling tablet experiences as they relate to retail now. When we look at the growth of tablet commerce, a lot of it has to do naturally with device adoption. And tablets are expected to grow faster than just about any device that we've measured. Obviously smarter than smartphones because they're at a lower base, but at a high level, our only tablet forecast that we'd published to date had that tablets by 2015 should be penetrated in about 80 million U.S. households. That was actually arguably a conservative forecast, because that forecast was done prior to the release of the Kindle Fire and some of these lower price point tablets. So that is likely to even be a higher number when we revise that forecast in the months to come. Many of the consumers that own tablets are actually consumers that already own smartphones. So what that means is that this is often a supplementary or an additional device to the consumer that already is very knowledgeable of how to use touchscreen devices or is very used to computing on the go and with mobility at their fingertips. This was some data that we've collected through our partnership with BizRate Insights, and we surveyed consumers who are online shoppers to get their sense of how many own smartphones, how many own tablets, and how many were still consumers that were open to the adoption of these different devices. And as you can see, about 9% of total online shoppers have some sort of a tablet, and of that 9%, 7% also already own smartphones. So really the takeaway is that this is a consumer who is an early adopter of these devices. We also know that tablets drive incremental web usage, and that's what the data here on this chart shows, is on the left side of the screen that the tablet itself actually drives people to spend more time online. Now, the other half are spending about the same amount of time, and then we'll talk a little bit about the devices that it cannibalizes in a moment. But it actually encourages consumers to spend simply more of their time browsing the web. We also see that it does actually, it's a device that's often adopted at the same time though, to replace the PC, and in some cases to actually, to supplement the PC. And that's what the data on the right-hand side is really meant to show, that particularly for young consumers, many of them are actually purchasing tablets instead of PCs. So what they'll have in their homes in the future is really that more portable device that doesn't necessarily have the full suite of Windows products. And that's important to keep in mind because as you consider, well, who are you going to be designing for over the next 10 to 15 years, that this is a completely different consumer than what we're used to today, who is more likely to be a consumer who's accessing the web on their desktop PC. I'd referenced that cannibalization of the desktop earlier, and here's really the data to support that. This is information that we had collected from consumers in Forrester's own consumer technographics data, asking consumers who own their tablets. Now, granted, this is a relatively small sample set at the time that we had collected the data, but still asking them, what were you replacing? And you can see that a significant part of what the tablet replaces is traditional media like print and books, like newspapers and books, but the second most replaced item is actually that desktop computer. Now, you'll see that it's not replacing certainly everybody's desktop computing, but it certainly is high on that list, and as tablets continue to grow, we expect that more and more consumers will be using these devices, these mobile devices for their web access, and then the desktop and the PC ends up being used more for things like enterprise email or for functions that are more specific to document creation. We also know that we'd alluded earlier to the fact that people are spending more time on the internet as a result of devices like the tablet. And what that means is that they're often multitasking and they are doing different things at the same time while they're using that tablet. The data here is really reflective of that, which is these are the answers to the question, where do you use that tablet device? The number one answer is in the family room, in the living room. Now, this is obviously a contrast to desktop PCs, which are typically used in home offices or offices, but really the fact that consumers are using it in multiple rooms of their home or while they're on the go, often doing other activities is an indication of the fact that they're often engaged with other media or they're doing other activities while they are in the process of actually surfing the web. So there's a lot of multitasking. Now, I want to transition a bit to the specific details with respect to shopping, because we asked consumers, again, in our BizRate Insight survey, this was data that was collected from consumers who had actually completed recent transactions online and also own tablets. So this was about a little more than 2,000 consumers that we surveyed earlier this year. How many of them actually used the tablet for shopping activities, and how many preferred that tablet over other devices, like, for instance, their PCs or even their smartphones? As you can see, a significant portion of consumers actually use that iPad over the smartphone. Now, remember that a significant overlap existed between both of those devices, so they opt for that larger screen. It's also that many consumers actually find it easier, and a lot of that ease could be that just the screen is more portable, so if they do have something that occurs to them on the fly as they're watching television, or somebody in their family may mention something, they don't have to run to another room. They can simply bring out this more portable device and find that information. And not an insignificant portion say that they actually have an interest in purchasing from the device. So those are actually all elements that are important to keep in mind. Now, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about apps and the different ways that information for retailers is retrieved on tablet devices, and this is the data with respect to how many of those tablet users have actually accessed retail sites and what kinds of sites they access. 56% of the consumers that we have surveyed in our tablet research earlier this year said that they did have some sort of a shopping app on their tablet. Again, this is a subset of consumers who are online shoppers, and the number one type of app that they had downloaded was a retailer specific app. I thought that this was very, very interesting because we'll talk about some of the challenges related with finding apps and even some of the content that exists on apps. But what this really points to is that this is what consumers are using, and these are the kinds of things that consumers are finding. It's also of interest that relatively few shoppers actually have downloaded fashion trends or other types of apps that are more general with respect to helping consumers make shopping decisions. And that could be as much a factor that there simply aren't that many apps of that sort that even exist. And we also know that retailers actually haven't invested a tremendous amount in tablets, or even for that matter, in mobile experiences yet. I present this data every once in a while. This was data that we had gathered from the State of Retailing Online, a survey that we do that Forrester does with shop.org every year, where we get benchmarks from retailers, online retailers. And some of the larger retail companies that are out there will look at this data and they express shock and disbelief because they are companies that have actually spent millions of dollars on their mobile or their tablet applications, and they have extremely tight relationships with various digital agencies that have built extremely robust user experiences on these devices. And you can probably guess the kinds of companies that I'm referring to. But when we have surveyed the e-commerce executives at the companies that we surveyed through shop.org, the average was actually extremely small because we did throw out the outliers in the responses. And we had the total investment for mobile and tablets being extremely small, and that's the total column, which is the second column here on the slide. Now, there was a significant growth in the planned investment because this was data that we had collected in 2011 asking about 2010 information, which was the last time that we had done the survey. So that figure was growing, but it was still extremely modest, and that's also part of the reason why you still see relatively small adoption of even retailer apps, in large part because the efforts simply weren't there. I combine that with the fact that apps in particular are a little bit of a challenge from a findability standpoint. If you look at, for instance, the Apple App Store, there are certain categorizations that every single app needs to fall into, and nothing here actually explicitly says shopping. There are travel apps explicitly and games and financial services apps that are extremely explicit, but there isn't really a shopping tab, which is unusual because as an industry, we've been used to everybody from Microsoft to Yahoo in the past really specifically calling out shopping as a destination and giving us as retailers a place to kind of put our stuff. And that hasn't been as much of an easy ride for app developers, and certainly not in the shopping arena. Most shopping apps typically fall within the category of lifestyle, and there are all kinds of other ancillary lifestyle agenda items like managing your time and other elements that are there in addition to a lot of the retailer apps that are juxtaposed next to that. I also would hasten to say that there are some significant supply-side challenges, which we saw in the data slide about how much companies are spending. But it's also quite astounding that tablet shopping as a whole is happening at all, given that there are many cases in which content that should be optimized for tablet devices isn't even yet optimized. Just to give you a high level, our estimates are that mobile shopping is a few billion dollars, and tablet commerce is about 20% of that mobile shopping figure. And mobile shopping is still a minority of overall e-commerce shopping. And we do consider tablet shopping a part of that mobile shopping experience for now. There are arguments to be made that it shouldn't be considered within mobile devices, but to get a sense of how large that is. That's important to call out. But I'd say that it's surprising because even though that there are certain use cases and examples, and here's just an example on the Burberry site, there's a feature called the Art of the Trench, which has a lot of beautiful user-generated photographs of people wearing trench coats. And seemingly that would be the perfect content to actually put on a mobile device because particularly a tablet device because tablets do render photography, particularly lots of different pictures, really, really well, especially if it's optimized for that content. But unfortunately, this is just an example of how that content, particularly the content that probably is best usable, isn't really rendered. And if the screen is too small to say, it's basically this is the Art of the Trench rendered on an iPad device where it says basically this is not content that has yet been optimized for the mobile browser. So there you have a great opportunity that is still being missed to this day, and that's just one illustration of how many different companies likely are not taking advantage of the opportunities that they have. So I'm going to talk about what some of those six places where we are seeing the greatest opportunity for ROI and really delivering the greatest value from tablet commerce. The first is about getting the basics right. And what I mean by getting the basics right is, at the very least, optimizing your content for mobile browsers. And that was really the allusion to what we just saw with the Burberry example, which is make sure that all of the content that you have, even renderable through a regular browser, is visible across all mobile browsers, especially the iPad if we're talking about mobile commerce and tablet commerce. 48% of the retailers that we surveyed said that they optimize their site for mobile browsers. Sadly, another 44% said that they're not doing anything special. What I would really encourage is that everybody on this call falls within that 48%. You don't want to be part of that 44%. You don't want one of your sites to be called out in a presentation like this as a company that really should be optimizing your content for different browsers or isn't even able to render the content in a way that is appropriate for your different shoppers. The second point that I think is important to also call out is to think about apps. The reality is that we're in an app world now, and just to give you a little bit of an illustration of just how important that is, there was a record week in the last week of 2011 where more than a billion apps were downloaded. Now, a large part of that is likely because consumers are getting these gifts, these mobile devices as gifts, and as you're excited, to get this new device, you go crazy in the various app stores that are out there. So that's likely a significant part of why that particular number was large. But the reality is that the number of consumers who have apps on their different devices that are used to using apps on different devices is growing, and it doesn't appear to be going away. Though there may be arguments around the viability of standards like HTML5, the reality is that no time soon will HTML5 make a dent in the app world, in large part because the standards haven't even been completely realized and solidified. It's also important to keep in mind that apps do have a lot of compelling features and a lot of compelling reasons to actually use them. There's a richer user interface. It's the ability to leverage features like cameras and barcode scanners. There is talk that in some iteration in the future, HTML5 may be able to achieve that bullet too, but the reality is that we're not there yet. And if you do want to have any type of a barcode scanner feature to take advantage of the forward-facing camera, you really do need to have that through an app. There's also the opportunity that particularly if you have features or functionality that leverage a store experience, that you don't necessarily need a fat pipe, particularly if you are offline when you want to be rendering that content. Apps also provide an ability to experiment, especially because a lot of companies are using multiple apps, even for within a family of brands, so that they can have discrete experiences that they can test and learn from. So you can do one app for your credit card or another app for your loyalty program without necessarily having to roll out very, very significant efforts that are all-encompassing. And probably one of the biggest advantages is that especially if you are a frequently used site, it's the opportunity to reduce clicks, particularly on mobile devices, because it's one click. You just kind of swipe and go to whatever destination it is that you're looking for. And particularly in the mobile browser world, where there is a little bit of the question as to what is the future of Google and search, the opportunity to actually be effective within an app search or an app store really poses a lot of questions as to the future and the value there. The next point that I think is important to call out is that there are so many rich retail use cases that have promise with apps. And when we look at some of the most engaging opportunities that retail apps have, and a lot of these are just some of the greater or some of the nicer and more appealing opportunities and executions that we've seen within apps, some of which have a retail focus, but really have probably yet to be fully even realized within any shopping app. Here are just a few examples. Retail apps we find, and particularly I should say those lifestyle apps, really work when they're very, very engaging. And one of the most engaging and most interesting is this app here that I'll call out. It's a site called Houzz, H-O-U-Z-Z, and essentially it was created for the interior design industry. And basically it's a bunch of very beautiful photographs of different rooms in different houses, which have all been curated by the Houzz editorial staff, but these are all photographs that have been uploaded by different interior designers all trying to sell their services to anybody who is interested in using them. And this is one of the most popular apps that's actually been downloaded on the lifestyle section within the Apple App Store. And it also has a copious amount of content. Nearly 250,000 photographs of all very, very high quality have actually been uploaded. And the astounding thing to me about this particular app is that there is no analog in fashion or even retail to this app of lots of beautiful pictures that are simply inspirational. I mean, there are some retail sites that have similar analogs like Sartorialist and some other sites that do have lots of photographs. But the interesting thing about this app is that this is something that consumers often use as a place to go back to when they're actually just looking for almost a catalog browse experience, because that's literally what this is that you can just keep flipping through images and see new pretty images whenever you have some downtime with your mobile device and you're looking for some interesting content to see. Some of the other ways that some of that engaging content can really exist is that by taking inspiration from some of the other apps that have been built that are relatively successful. And some of the apps that exist already are often in the educational space that do have a significant amount of interactivity, often because they're built for young children. So some of that interactivity that particularly pushes the envelope are interactivity elements that relate to things like audio and voiceover that can help to explain concepts or visual imagery that you may have. This is just an example of an app, which is basically a Dr. Seuss book, where literally there is a voiceover that reads through and calls out every single word in the book. There are also a lot of drag and drop apps that really help to enable, in this case, a young child that may be learning about words. But you can imagine a situation where there is voiceover that kind of guides people through different shopping experiences or even drag and drop functions that can help people put together outfits or different ways of merchandising different products. We also know that apps can be really, really effective if they provide an easy experience. And some of that ease is probably most noted in apps like Amazon, which have often been described to us as kind of the 30-second traffic stop purchase where all of your information is pre-populated, and the idea is that to enable somebody to purchase something very, very quickly, once they've decided that they are far along the purchase funnel. There are so many useful ways that information can be provided, things like other data points like wait times or information about store locators. And this is just an example of an app for a hospital, actually an urgent care facility, and what the different wait times at different urgent care facilities are. Now, that works really well for this, but you can imagine a scenario in which if a consumer is deciding to go to which grocery store within their vicinity to know if there happens to be a smaller crowd at particular grocery stores and the wait time is faster, that can actually encourage the consumer to shift their behavior from going to one destination to versus another. Apps can also be incredibly useful if they can support habitual tasks, and that's one of the things that is important to call out from a lot of the lifestyle apps that do exist is they're often about task management and about really helping to optimize consumers' times. One of the more interesting apps that I've seen is an app called Grocery IQ, which is about helping consumers actually manage a lot of their grocery lists and everything from the offers that get presented to helping pre-populate those lists and helping different family members to actually populate those lists across different devices while at the same time synchronizing that content. So really, be thinking about all of those different types of use cases and opportunities during the course of that tablet app development. My fourth point here is that third-party development is often very, very much an option. And what I mean by third-party development is using partners. And some of those partners can be as explicit as designers and developers who are professional, but it can also be as basic as just enabling APIs. This is an example of before Etsy even launched its iPad app, there were essentially, I wouldn't call them rogue developers, but individuals who basically created similar experiences, and unlike professional developers that typically will charge a fee, these guys essentially built their apps and then charged a download fee, and they actually made money off of the apps. And if you spend enough time kind of trolling the app store, you see lots of different use cases like this for companies that didn't yet build iPad applications, ranging from sites from Walmart to Home Depot. There's also a lot of third-party supplemental usage by partnering with other programs, like a lot of the tablet catalog app makers out there. When we look at the number of apps that actually get downloaded for any given retailer, that number is not enormous. We've often heard that 100,000 downloads for your tablet app is a great number, and some of these guys actually have more than 100,000 downloads alone. And this is just a few of the catalog apps that exist out there on for the iPad. It's the Finds app, it's Catalog Spree, it's Coffee Table, it's Google Catalogs. These are all potentially partners for all the retailers that are listening here, because these are ways to actually get to that broader distribution on an app without necessarily having to invest in it. And one of the interesting things is that some of those some of that information is also being extended to other print vehicles, not just catalogs, but also things like FSIs and the freestanding inserts. That was the Best Buy example on that screenshot. It's also important to keep in mind that tablets are much more than web surfing devices, and what I mean by that is that right now we think of tablets as what is the great content that we can show that's going to encourage somebody to browse our content and then ultimately, you know, to make a purchase. And what a lot of companies have realized is that a lot of these devices are actually a lot more than simply web browsing tools. They're cameras, they're accelerometers, they're NFC devices, they have chemical sensors. And what that means is that it opens up a whole new set of possibilities for what can happen with that device and what it can do. And some of that, the most innovative companies have actually found that the really interesting use cases often exist in physical stores. And that's why you see nearly a third of retailers actually saying that they're investing, to the degree that they're investing in tablets, that a significant part of the experience is really about supplementing the store experience. So to give you a few examples, one of my favorite ones is the Oakley app, and Oakley has this particular app that they've created, which is as much for their stores as anybody, where essentially you can simulate what different types of lenses look like and what it feels like to look through these different lenses of different colors and shapes. And polarization capabilities across different landscapes, and you can pan that landscape by moving the iPad physically. So some really, really interesting capabilities that also exist. You have a lot of companies also using these devices at POS or on shelves to be both information tools as well as simply capabilities to enable shoppers to actually purchase, in some cases even simulate what makeup, for instance, can look like on them. And that's what some of these various apps that we have. This is actually the Benefit Cosmetics app, which is in stores, which has not only the capability of providing consumers the ability to see you know, kind of the different content that they have, but also provides some information for idle shoppers that may simply want to you know, kind of be browsing other web information as well. We also have, and this was actually from an iPad app from a restaurant in Boston, where one has the capability of not only providing this visual lookbook that helps to upsell shoppers, but ultimately you also have down the road on the roadmap here the capability of rendering payment or being able to actually put items on a particular tab and associate it with cards so that that helps to kind of close that loop of the transaction. My last bit of advice here is really to recognize that you are your own best advocate with respect to your app. The challenge, probably the biggest challenge with respect to apps now, is finding an app, recognizing that there are hundreds of thousands of apps, including iPad apps, and it is very, very difficult to actually, you know, be exposed to that app unless somebody knows to type it into the app search, or unless you're pushing the app from your website on when consumers do access you on a mobile browser. So to really, really keep that in mind and to recognize that at this moment in time, we don't have a great solution for the App Store in the way that there is Google paid search. So in that regard, you almost need to have a separate marketing program for thinking about how to get the word out about your app and how to get that number of downloads finalized. So I'm going to quiet down now because we've still have a lot of great content and hand it back to Melissa. This is my contact information if anybody does have any specific questions for me.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Sucharita. That was great information, great examples. I always like to see examples when talking about this kind of stuff, so that was great. Next up, we have a real actual marketer, Mike Mateo, the lead for user experience at QVC, and he's going to go over some of his experiences with tablets. So take it away, Mike.
Okay. Thank you very much, Melissa. So I'm just going to quickly run through kind of the process we use to identify and then prioritize initiatives for optimization on the tablet. And then Nathan Fermonte is going to jump in and do a little more of a deep dive about implementing those issues. So it's a pretty common sense approach. You know, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to do a deep dive on our metrics. C3 showed some great slides about overall industry trends in the metrics, but obviously every retailer, every website, every product you have is going to be potentially different. For us, we saw iOS, iPad really growing. We didn't see so much on Android. That may be a function of our audience. You know, your audience certainly may be different, so that's something you really want to drill into. The other thing you really want to look at is what are the tasks people are doing when they come to your site on a tablet? C3 talked a little bit about the cannibalization of tablet to PC and how maybe tablet's a little more similar to PC than it is to mobile. But we see a combination of those two things. People are still likely to use tablet for those quick check-in types of things that are common on the mobile app. So to use a QVC example, if someone's watching TV and they want to look up some more information about the item that's being shown, that's something where they might grab their tablet, similar to how they might grab their phone, just quickly look that up. Whereas if they decide they need a new camera, and they want to go to CNET, and they want to do price comparison over a lot of sites and look up different features, that's something that's a little more complicated. Probably not as easy to do on a tablet. You might want to use multiple tabs, et cetera. So really digging into those metrics is your first step. Then the next thing we did was usability research. Now, hopefully most of you are familiar with this methodology. If you're not, basically what we did is we brought people in with their tablets and we observed them using them, trying to do the tasks that we saw them doing through our metrics on the platforms we were looking for. And why this is so important is that metrics are great. They give you a lot of information. A/B testing is great. Don't get me wrong. Usability is going to tell you, though, why you're seeing certain things happen. And the only way you're going to be able to really get into that why is if you observe. So an example. You might have a form that has a number of fields on it that you have to fill out, and you might see people abandoning that. I think a natural thought there would be, well, you know, typing is a little harder on these devices. Maybe people just don't want to fill it out. Well, when we did some testing, we saw that our forms were auto-correcting people's email addresses and last names, and they were submitting the forms and getting errors and it's creating a very frustrating experience. So that's something that we probably wouldn't have known or thought of if we hadn't actually observed a real customer trying to fill that out. So really you want to make sure you do both of those things. And then you can get yourself a list of the initiatives you want to go after. So once we had our list, we broke it into two categories. And the first one really ties into what C3 was talking about, which is get the basics right, okay? What's broken? And I don't mean like a bug. I mean broken from a customer experience standpoint, not working as well as it works on a PC. How can we address those issues? And the second bucket is really things that tie into how can we utilize the advanced features of the tablet to make the experience better. So the beautiful thing about the broken stuff is it tends to be, unless you have major layout issues or something along those lines, it tends to be very small things that you can do. We've worked with Monotate to address some of these and target some of these issues relatively easily. One example is right there on the page. Tap area is a really big thing. If you're studying this, the touch UI, tap area can be a real sensitive issue because people have big fingers and tap the wrong thing all the time, and our research showed this as well. So, one example is we made our buttons a little bit larger on the tablet very, very simple thing to do. You can also add padding around things. And these are small things you can do to make the experience better. That autocorrect example I gave, another small thing you can do, they add up, and over time, make sure that your tablet experience is at least as good as your PC experience. Once you feel comfortable and you feel like you've gotten the basics right, that's when you want to start to think about what are those next generation things? What are those amazing features that Sucharita was talking about that you can utilize to make your experience better? Now, we're specifically talking about website optimization here. So obviously, apps is a little bit of a different story. You can probably go a little bit further down that path there. But even on the web, there are definitely things you can do to make the tablet experience even better than the PC experience and utilize things like gestures and, you know, accelerometers and location finders and all those sorts of things. Really simple example. This is ESPN.com. If you go there on your iPad, if you look on the left side, you got this Michigan guy and this little widget here, and there are five thumbnails underneath, and you can see the middle one is selected. It's not that easy to tell, but on a PC, basically what you do is you just click through each of those thumbnails, and it changes the image above. And I think it probably rotates automatically as well. On the iPad, you can swipe it. Again, this is something relatively minor, but when you're using the iPad and you see this on a website, you say, you feel really good about the fact that that happened because it's actually making it easier because you're on a tablet. So those are the types of things you want to think about. Obviously, you can go a lot further than what ESPN is doing. But my point is more that these are the types of things you want to think about to make your website better, to make people think to go to your website when they're on their tablet and use it more when they're on their tablet. The step beyond that is probably thinking about a completely optimized website for a tablet. eBay, for example, has an iPad touch, or I guess I should say a touch tablet optimized site. Now, I'm not really sure why, but when you go to eBay.com, you don't get it. You just get the regular website. But if you go to touch.ebay.com, you can get that. I feel like, though, if you're just getting started in this, it seems a little aggressive for me to go that route just yet when there are so many of these smaller things that you can do, these little things that you can address that are going to really have a big impact when you combine them all together. And that's something that you can do when you work with Monetate. They make it really easy for you to combine a number of these optimizations together and to create a much better overall experience. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to them to finish up.
Thanks, Mike. That was great. Hi, everybody. Again, I'm Nathan Richter, Director of Strategic Services here at Monetate, and trying to dive a little more deeply into those elements that Mike had alluded to, that sort of the small individual impactful elements that can add up to the potential that maybe you would want to get to an app level of development, but knowing that can be a heavy investment. Want to show you some of the sort of intermediate steps where we can get there. So again, Sucharita had given us a great overview of the current landscape of the tablet and how it's really evolving, especially from our product mix, QVC's experience, and we'll go into how we can help bring some of that information and that specific ROI to you so you can make the best decision for your organization on how you're going to take advantage of this emerging segment. Very quickly, who we are and what we do. We are a SaaS platform that's targeting personalization and testing. We allow our clients to deliver unique experiences by customer segments or targets and then test that to validate that those experiences are having an impact. So here's our shot of the different client base that we have that is utilizing us right now, and we'll quickly go through exactly how we do that. We're a single tag that is installed on your site, allowing us to, again, make these domain changes at the domain level. Very simple integration, one single tag on all of the pages, and allows us to make these changes in real time to deliver specific content to your users based on different targets. As you see, the tablet is an emerging piece that when you think of how we look at it from an optimization perspective, is this is a unique experience from a size, from an interaction way of seeing how the users are using your site, and it's understanding what the differences may be for each size, because that's going to be important as we kind of break between the Kindle Fire and the iPad and how your site's really going to function. Quickly, how we work, we define the who. In this case, as you see, and actually within our interface, out of the box, there are specific targets around. I specifically want to target the Kindle Fire user as they're coming, the domain, the browser's understanding that this, what device the user is coming in from. We can, in essence, just target those customers that you have coming to your site to say we are only going to change certain elements or experiences on your site for those customers. So we've actually seen the iPad historically. We embedded that as an out-of-the-box default target, and we now have Kindle Fire available as well. So through that structure, it's defining who you want to target at that level, the what you want to change about the site, when, if there's any timing constraints, and the why is that testing platform that allows you to split the audience to really get a relevant testing understanding of what the impact is to have business clarity around the decisions you're making. So reaching the tablet shoppers, as has been, I think, said very thoroughly and well by both Mike and Sucharita, is the very first step is really looking at the metrics that you have in-house and understanding what is it that your customers are doing. Site Catalyst, Core Metrics, Google Analytics, they're all going to give you some insight of what are the different things that customers are looking to do. We know that mobile and tablet are having a split in terms of activity and what's happening for each of the device. And I think to reiterate, a key thing to understand is that difference in size between the iPad and the Kindle. Kindle is a 7-inch device that is really almost half the size. And so it's understanding that a user may have a different experience or a different expectation of how they might use your site on the Kindle Fire versus the iPad. We did some quick data pull for December, from December 1st through December 25th, looking at the iPad traffic versus the Kindle Fire traffic, and then compared that since Christmas through yesterday. So it's basically a 3-week comparison leading up to Christmas. The Kindle Fire traffic has literally doubled in one audit that we did for the 2-week period. The traffic is now twice as much as in the 3-week period it was preceding Christmas. For another area, the traffic is exactly the same. So while from a percentage basis the Kindle Fire may not be a large portion of your audience, I think it's very important to understand that that is going to be emerging. So as you're making decisions, you really want to focus on what are you going to get the most value at. In the beginning, is it maybe focusing on the iPad customer versus the Kindle Fire, but I think understanding the Kindle Fire size population and that explosion is very important. The first step that we like to tell our customers to do is to literally just do that, as simple as it sounds, is audit your actual website on the each device. Understand what's working, what's not. The iPad iOS is very different from Kindle in terms of how it's going to interact with your native site. So just by running through that and doing a high-level heuristic walkthrough can be one of the most powerful ways to really find opportunities there. If you do have a dedicated app already, you've already made that commitment, we always like to really understand and test. And again, one way is to just have a promotion that specifically calls it out, but then also understand and track the audience. If you just push them back to your regular HTML site, what's the actual value of that? Again, with the investment, we like to understand the individual elements and sort of build up to an overall ROI model that would necessitate you potentially building a full-on app. So you've done your diagnostics, you've looked at the different activities that your site users are doing. what we recommend as a starting point and a great place to get some immediate ROI bump is look at those main things that your customers are trying to do. Are they browsing? Are they buying? Are they searching? Are they looking to access elements from their account? So one of the elements we've helped introduce is taking your native site, finding the top 3 to 5 functions that customers are coming in to do, and putting what we call a quick nav bar that sort of floats throughout the entire experience. So again, you haven't had to modify your entire site, but now you've given customers, based on the data that you've seen or potentially through usability like Mike had shared with the QVC experience, you can highlight what those core site functions are and get those up in front of the customers to help ease them through that overall experience. And again, here you see browse, search, cart, new arrivals. You can imagine this could be your store locator if you're multi-channel and that's a big part of your business. Maybe if you're in the travel world, it might be signing into your account to get flight information or other quick widgets there, but really understanding that. Another good example here of really exaggerating and highlighting what might be a very high-value function on your site is the search bar. Here's an example of a client who knew they had high level of search traffic and wanted to, again, for those smaller devices, overcompensate and exaggerate the size so that it was much easier to interact with and, again, help people down that path that they knew was a valuable funnel for them to get to a conversion. Optimizing the overall site features, we've spoken about this. A typical understanding is how Flash and a lot of the iPads, iPhones, Apple products do not interact that well with that. So just understanding which of your site areas may have content that is not applicable or functioning like you would want it to or rendering as you intended in those areas. Again, you can upload through a tool like Monetate or others, you could upload some static content that can keep, at least give the experience you're looking for in the marketing messaging. Another good example, and this Best Buy example is actually them doing it quite well, but a unique nuance can be the hover state and how tablets deal with that. Some navigations who have what we call the flyout, which has sort of your faceted dimensions or deeper category detail within the nav elements, on touch, it will either take you to that main top-level category or does not stay open and persistent for you to pick those elements. So people can actually get stuck in kind of a circuitous interface there that isn't allowing them to drill into your catalog. So Best Buy has done a very nice job of optimizing that where each click opens and persists for you to go to the next level, but again, a good opportunity there to understand if your site, if you have something like the flyout, is your navigation working as intended on all of the major devices. The known as the fat finger effect, and again, Mike had brought up the great example of the add to cart button. You can think of that as any prime CTA or call to action. So again, it could be your store locator, it could be a flight finder or major widget that you might have on there. You just really want to ease the process of what your customers are trying to do when they come to the site and make it more obvious. Another example we highlighted and have introduced to sites is predictive search. So within the on-site search navigation, basically the type ahead functionality helping minimize the keystrokes that a consumer would have to use on these smaller devices and helping them sort of have the shortcut to where they may be going is something we've seen have an impact on the device as well, and again, cut down the clicks, or in this case, the keypad strokes to get to the products or the areas that they're looking for. A huge opportunity is the product detail pages. Over time, with other applications such as our social sharing widgets and reviews and different amounts of detail and product recommendations, Amazon is kind of the interesting example. As we all know, their pages have so much information and are very, very robust in their SEO potential. But if you actually look at their native Kindle app for the Fire, is actually one of the most clean and streamlined product details that's out there. So this is one of the things we also advise clients to do is take a look at your product detail page and understand, are there any elements that may not be key converting pieces in this individual session, and start to look at, can you remove those and find some more clean pathways to get the consumers to the cart or to check out. A great way to look at it is think of what you may have as a quick view in some of your CMS systems already. here's an example from one client. This is their regular product detail, and if you look at their quick view, is very streamlined. So we've taken a chance to take a look at the individual social sharing elements. There were multiple tabs up above on there. The additional products have been removed, as well as additional things by the add to basket button. So you can see just keeping the focus much more on what the customer is trying to do can help minimize some of the distraction on the smaller devices and really help people get to what they're trying to do, which is, in this case, pick a color, pick a size, add to basket, and start the checkout process. Something else to think about that we're seeing, and again, I think we're only going to see an acceleration of this with the Kindle Fire and Amazon Payments in general, as people are going to adopt Amazon Prime more and more to keep up with that content there. But understand what your payment mix specifically as it relates to your tablet. So going back to the overall ease of checkout in the process, whether it's Wi-Fi or certain considerations, customers may be more comfortable using some non-credit card processing. So here's some sample data that you can see on an iPad that PayPal is actually the second largest payment transaction type and is almost equal to Visa. So in a circumstance like that, we try to help our clients really highlight these alternate payment scenarios that, again, can not only facilitate what the customer is asking for, but potentially increase your overall conversion as you're making it easier to get through the checkout process, as the PayPal sort of quick buy can obviously remove several steps within the checkout process. These are just several of the highlights that Monotate has come across in working with our clients and through some different studies. We have many more resources that we would encourage you to check out on our site as well, including some infographics about different services. And those are really the details. Thanks for your time, and I look forward to hearing your questions specifically.
Great. Thanks so much, Nathan, and also thanks, Mike. Guys gave some great information as well. We do have some questions. We only have about 5 minutes, unfortunately, but I just want everybody to know that the folks are happy to respond to questions after the fact. So hopefully most of these questions we can get answers to at some point anyway. So I guess most of these questions are for Sucharita's presentation. So I'm going to sort of start there for right now. And I actually thought this one was really interesting. Can you give examples of who, in your opinion, does apps and tablet commerce well? Like, which companies? Is there any that come to mind, jump to mind? I mean, I'm sure you mentioned some during your presentation, but.
Well, as far as, it's the same companies that tend to be larger, just e-commerce companies overall. I mean, I really would put Amazon and eBay high on that list. I mean, Amazon in particular, because they have really, they're generating a significant amount of their volume and revenue now through mobile devices. And a significant part of that is the fact that people already, go to that site as it is, but they've successfully migrated the mobile shopper to their, to the mobile experience. Part of that was already in Bread because they had one-click checkout and they were able to support the reduction in keystrokes, et cetera. But I would suggest that they're probably, some of the better players. When we looked at, kind of great experiences, I actually go outside of retail. I mean, there are a lot more media companies and financial services companies that have done a better job kind of translating their sites and doing all of the things that Mike and Nathan talked about, like, increasing the tap size of key interactive elements and kind of making sure that what is swipeable, for instance, is integrated. And that's where I would look to, kind of best case examples. I mean, I don't know that retail is the shining beacon of great cases in, the tablet commerce world yet.
That's interesting, because another one of the questions I wanted to ask was if you're seeing any rise in the adoption of tablets for B2B, in the B2B space, even in retail, like retail versus like wholesale parts of retail, I guess, or just
well,
B2B in general.
Anecdotally, and what that means is that we're seeing, like, for instance, sales reps having custom apps that they then take on sales calls to showcase their catalogs to prospective buyers. There's sometimes uses of, you know, industrial strength, and what I mean by that is mainly, you know, that there are, you know, kind of heavier, you know, kind of cases, and, you know, there's extra protection put on the screens of the iPad in, you know, more industrial settings, like, for instance, in warehouses or places where then, you know, you can still access a lot of the information that would have been accessed on a desktop, but simply making it more portable. So that one need not, you know, be stuck in a conference room or behind the desk in order to access information that they may need, you know, while they're walking around. I mean, those are the anecdotal examples that we've heard of. I don't have, you know, kind of great data on on how much it's being used yet. As you can see, you know, from the data earlier, that, you know, the investment still, you know, from an enterprise standpoint, is still pretty nascent.
Okay, great. We only have time for a couple more questions. I'm just going to kind of pick the most sort of broadest one. So how critical do you think tablets will be to a multi-channel strategy going forward? I mean, are they going to have to be sort of like the third or fourth piece of the puzzle, or, you know, is it still going to be, a, you know, something that you might want to test but not necessarily focus on?
I'll have my opinion, but then I think that it's important to get Mike's perspective and Nathan's perspective on this too, because I think that they, you know, they're on the ground floor of a lot of these decisions. I mean, moving forward, it will be much bigger because of all of the data that we showcased earlier. More people are using tablets. More of them are using it in lieu of their desktop. So we expect that a significant amount of tablet traffic will force this to be a priority. Does it need to be, you know, kind of number one or number two priority now? Probably not, but certainly we expect that it will be very, very high on the list within 24 months.
Nathan and or Mike, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, this is Nathan. I think initially what we're going to see as well is, and Sujarita touched upon it, I think, with some of her statistics, but I think initially we're going to see a lot of cannibalization in terms of just the devices taking over, not necessarily the incremental traffic and or conversion piece. So the other piece that we're keeping in mind and really looking at goes back to just this device specificness. There seems to be, obviously, iPad has the huge lion's share of the market. Kindle Fire we expect to grow, but really understanding, is this going to keep sort of permeating by device size, or are we going to settle in? Because I think those are still the things that also differentiate from the experience side. But at the beginning, again, our feeling is just right now we're just going to see a lot of cannibalization as people just start to adopt the devices themselves in lieu of what they currently use at home.
Mm-hmm. This is Mike. Yeah, I think the one of the trends you're starting to see in design that's just starting to take hold is really designing in a flexible way that can work for a broad number of devices. And I think, you know, the tricky piece is that there's just going to be more and more different ways that people can get on online or onto your website, I guess. You know, TVs is going to be one that's probably going to come out relatively soon or start to build up relatively soon. So the screens are going to get smaller. Screens are going to get bigger. If you can design something one way that can be used by multiple devices, it's going to be much less of a headache, you know, much more operationally feasible. BostonGlobe.com is an interesting one that's designed. Their new design is pretty flexible depending on which device you go. It kind of shifts content around, but it's basically the same design. So I could see that as a trend going forward as companies try to manage dealing with all these different different places, different devices.
Okay, great. Well, I think that's all we have time for, but we'll be sure to get some of these questions answered after the event, so after we end here. So on behalf of ROI, I just want to thank all the listeners today for attending this Retail Online Integration webinar, and I'd also like to thank our wonderful speakers. And for additional information about our series, our webinar series, check out retailonlineintegration.com. In the meantime, please take a moment to fill out our feedback survey. Thank you guys so much. Bye-bye.